Hi, everyone. Welcome to the TimingResearch.com Crowd Forecast News, episode number 247 for December 2nd, 2019. We are recording this at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, and my name is David Cosmeter. I'm the creator of TimingResearch.com. Today, we will be discussing the 323rd weekly report. So if you haven't had a chance to take a look at this yet, just go to timingresearch.com/reports, and you can get either the PDF or a web version there. Today, I have arranged for Norman Hallett and Jim Kenny to be here. Neil Batho was also supposed to be here, but he had to cancel, so we'll try to have him back soon. And Jim will be moderating, so I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to Jim.
Great. Thank you, David, and great to be here, and great to have Norm with us again. This market has been very exciting in the first few hours of the return from the holiday, and we'll get into what's going on and many other things as well. But before we get started, we have Norm Hallett, and Norm's going to give us a little background on himself and also a little background on the company that he's running down there.
Okay, thanks. Thanks, Jim. And Neil must eat too much turkey.
Yeah.
He's eating too much turkey. I am, as most of you may know out there, I'm known as the Disciplined Trader. That's what the site is all about. Because we at The Disciplined Trader concentrate on the mental and emotional issues of trading, help traders in that respect. And I there's no better time to have me on than during this holiday season when markets are a bit thinner and moves are a bit extended. I think we'll probably get into that a little bit later. But I've really enjoyed being in the business for the last 30 plus years. And it wasn't always a good time until when I met my wife. She asked me why I carried so much emotion around with trading. When I had a good day, I was the best guy to get along with, and when I had a bad day, you couldn't talk to me. I was quiet. Not that I was a horrible person. Don't get me wrong. I was a nice guy, but you couldn't talk to me for a while until I cleared my head. So she could always tell whether I had a good or bad day. Well, she being a subconscious trainer really helped me out. It took me literally a year before I would accept her help because traders, at least I am, I'm a heady guy. We have a joke around the house that I'm always right. And I'm not always right, but the idea is that you got to break down the ego, and I let her start to work with me from changing the way I thought. That started our whole business about helping traders do what she did for me, and so we've spent a couple of decades doing it. So that's why I enjoy being on these shows, and of course I can't help, I have a math degree, so I can't help but look at the numbers all the time, and I'm a trader. Hey, I like to take a risk, and this is a risk business, but you've got to take the right kind of risk. So that's what we're about here.
Yeah, definitely getting over the mental things that can hold you up. Some people see something they should do, but whatever holds them back from doing it, or they are onto something good and they can't stand it or something like that. So the mental part of trading is just huge. And it's a big thing that people should focus on, not just the charts and the Fibonacci numbers and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Well, let's go into the questions that we do every week. And the first question is always the S&P between today's opening, which looks like it opened at 3143. Where do we think we're going to close from today's opening of 3143 and Friday's close?
Well, by Friday's close, and I kind of have a two-part answer here because it's speaking of Fibonacci, and I'll get into that later why, but I think we're going lower. I think today there's a bit of a caveat that we need to close down here 20, 25, 30 points lower in the S&P so that we get back into a particular trading upward sloping trading range that we've been in. We're re-entering that now. And I think, judging by today's action and some of the things we're going to talk about later, I think we're going lower.
And with regards to some of the, your confidence level, how do you feel the confidence level is?
Well, I've got a very high confidence for another nice leg down before the end of the week. And I have a lesser confidence about a little bit more downward action. So I would have to say that a total downward action, I'm really in the 80%, 75-80% range here.
Yeah. My feeling is obviously you don't want to step in front of a freight train. So the first thing that had to happen was the market to stop making new highs. Now, the high last week was 31.54. Today's high is 31.43. So at least right this second, it has stopped making new highs. And somebody could use 31.54 as a defensible point, because because if you don't have a defensible point, you know, obviously you're selling into the abyss or buying into the abyss type thing. So it's nice to see that the 3154 with the market at 3115, you know, looks fairly secure at this moment. Mm-hmm. But I was looking at the 10-day chart and there was a gap up from 3110 to about 3120 last week. And that gap today just got filled when we went down to 3110. So I would think that not only, like you're saying, it would be important to close on the weak side, but it also would be important to really try to get underneath this 3110, because there's not a coincidence why it stopped there today. It filled the gap there, and now it seems to be supporting. So patience is a virtue when you're trying to get on the sell side of this thing, because obviously it has blown out a lot of people that have been negative on it with a run that just doesn't seem to end, even though the earnings were just okay. The GDP is 2.1, which is okay. And like Jamie Dimon said in an interview, it seems like the markets are discounting a very rosy future. So I would say, you know, you're probably right that it should be rolling over a bit, but it would be nice to have a day or two of price evidence that it can't take out 3154, you know?
Mm-hmm. Neil,
with regards to your reasonings behind Burton, you know, what are you coming up with here?
Jim, can you hear me?
Feel that,
Neil just sent me a message saying his prediction for the week is down 75%. So just wanted to
75% on the S&P, get down to about 1,000 or 75% confidence level?
Yeah, his confidence.
I'm only kidding. Yeah. So he's a believer that that we finally broke the fever. I mean, this thing obviously was in a fever pitch. I mean, you know, when you go in, how many days in a row, Norm, was it up? You know, that's not the way the world works generally. This is not money market you're in when you buy stocks. And it almost got to the point where, you know, it seemed like a risk-free investment for a while. And that's just not the way the world works on this stuff. So maybe we're getting a break in the action. The reasonings behind your feelings of that it could roll over, Norm, where are we at on those?
Well, you know, I've been fooled before. The last time I was on the show, I think I was fooled. In fact, most of the time, as this particular upward movement, I'm looking at the last since October, and I'm seeing some, especially in the month of November, the bodies on these candles are very, very small. The distance between the open and the close are doji worthy or spinner worthy because.
Can you explain that a little bit? Because I'm not an expert on the candles, and many people may not be. So when the candles have that formation, which you say is a tighter formation, what's that telling?
Yeah, well, the important part, as the Japanese who invented all this, the Japanese rice farmers, the open and the close are the most important parts of the trading day. It's where you've got to make a decision based on everything you thought through at night, and then at the end of the day, you've got to live with it till the next morning. So the open and the close is are very important. Now, that open and the close comprise the body of the candle. The candle being the price action. For that day, let's say in a daily chart of trading, of course, the candle or this that's comprised of the body and what they call the wicks. The wick, of course, makes sense to that nomenclature for, as we describe a candle. The wick are trades that occur outside of the open and the close, outside of that body. So sometimes a doji is where the market opens and closes at exactly the same price. So what you wind up having is something that looks like a cross with the two wicks extending from the open and close line of the body being just a line when the open and close have equal pricing. That's called a doji, and that's usually an indication of non-decision. Doesn't mean that the market is reversing. It just means there is an equal potential to reverse as to continue. So it's a non-decision. That same thing could mostly be said for a very small body where the market opens and closes at almost the same price. If you had a $10 range in gold and the open and close, if gold moved from $1,200 to $1,210 in a trading day, I just picked two numbers out of the air, during the trading day, but it opened at $1,203 and closed at $1,203.90, you've got a 90 cent body on a $10 candle, the whole candle including the wick. So it's still mostly wicks, but you've got that small body. Again, indecision, but not quite the perfect.
What you're saying is there's not a lot of decision on it, because then the candles would be bigger and they would have maybe less wicks because of the fact that it hasn't traded out of that range very much. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. And usually you'll see a series of larger candles, the larger bodies. And we're not seeing that, you know, in meaningful moves. And we're not, and what I didn't mention is that I'm going to say red and green on a day that the market closes below the open, that body is colored red. On a day where the market closes above the open, that body is green. And generally you'll see, you can only, it's like a picture talking to you. You see, if you see a lot of green bodies, it means that at least during the day, the market ended higher than it opened. And that's gives you a positive momentum that continues to carry from candle to candle. And I'm seeing that all the way up. If I count the last, besides the last 2 days, today's trading and the trading on Friday, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 of the last 12 candles, 10 of them are green. And I can go back to the next 10 look, and it looks like about the same ratio. So we're right. Seeing interday positive feeling, but no real strength. That's why it's important to look at your momentum indicators and look at volume, because sometimes the candles don't tell you everything. And strangely enough, they haven't given me much more information, except for to say what you've said in the beginning, that we continue to make new highs. That continues to keep people in the market.
Right.
That also...
Would you say it's a lack of seller environment more than it's a buyer, heavy buying environment?
Well, you know, there's nowhere to go with your money but stocks with this low interest rate environment worldwide. I mean, other countries are investing in our stock market because we're on the move. So you're always looking to buy. Everybody's looking to buy. They're looking for reasons to buy. When you look for reasons to buy, you usually find some reasons to buy until right. You get some overwhelming. The problem is it creates a lot of people that are just lulled into believing that the market will continue to go up, not only day to day, but month to month and year to year. Now, of course, you can defend that argument with, the stock market goes up an average of 17% a year for the last 10 years, whatever number you want to pull out. But the ride during that period of time can be treacherous. Mm-hmm. And so that's, again, where the emotions come in. And now that we're in the season, you're going to get thinner markets. You've got much thinner markets, and you've got the Santa Claus rally that makes people think we're going higher. But then you got last year where the Santa Claus rally really killed people, got a lot of people out of the bottom, and then right after Santa went back to the North Pole, the market had one of its best climbs in history. So you know, this is a very dangerous time to trade if you don't have a plan and you don't have discipline. It's an excellent time to trade if you have a good plan and the discipline to run it. So
yeah, the three things, you know, that probably people should keep an eye on in addition to all the technicals is that if this thing does stall out, these managers who want to get a nice bonus, you know, they may want to grab some of the money off the table. And December 15th, right now it looks probable that these December 15th tariffs might go on, and the Fed meets on December 11th. So, you know, you got three pretty big things going on in addition to the technicals. So it's understandable why people might not want to sell because the prices rise every day. But if they got any reason to sell, the exit and the volume that wants to come out into a no buyer environment could cause a pretty sharp decline as well, right?
Yes, and add the in the recent several years, the last several years, we've seen 6, 7, 8, 9% pullbacks in the market, so that when only to see it recover to new highs quickly in some cases,
right.
And so you know that's going to lend an excuse for people to continue to hold in a market that is tumbling, and that may be
if this market dropped, there'd be a lot of people who would adopt the attitude of, hey, it's just a pullback, I'm not getting out. Hey, it's just a pullback, I'm not getting out. Because the moving averages are in a good position, and the interest rates are in a good position, and the unemployment situation is a good position. And so there is a huge complacency. I mean, just look at your VIX, that's all you really need to see. That complacency is huge. But if the VIX were to start breaking 14 or 15, well, it's about broken 14 today. If it started breaking 15 or 16, and you started getting 30, 70 or so on the S&P getting taken out, the story could change a little bit quickly. Huh?
Yeah, and they would be right with all of the justifications of holding, because there is nowhere to go and so on and so forth. But what I didn't like about today's today's action in the numbers.
Right.
Was that this time it was Europe and the rest of the world that looked had some pretty nice numbers, and it was our manufacturing numbers that were under some pressure. So that was a little bit different to me. And now if I look technically, and I draw my Fibonacci numbers, if you look at the last rally and you start your Fibonacci retracements in the third trading day of October, you use that bottom and then the recent top on Friday. And if you stretch that out on your Fibonacci there, you're going to see that this particular, if this is a retracement that has any legs, there really is a spot that that we've got a good chance to get to. And that spot is right in that 3,000 to 3,040 area. And I
right.
say that because that's the recent double top we saw that was broken through. The
exactly.
Double top. I'm sorry?
Yeah, exactly. Because sometimes the market will come back to that breakout point, right?
That's right. And this one was right at the end of July. It was the first top. Mm-hmm. And then right in the middle of September was the second. You connect those two lines, you got a nice horizontal line right at that 30-28 area. But right above it at 30-41, so you're talking about 11 points from the S&P, that's your first Fibonacci line. Now, anybody that uses Fibonacci knows that it's not an exact science. What you look for is deceleration and hesitation at these lines. And I would not be surprised to see the market hesitate going lower at that point, because we're now the resistance is now the support with the double top, and
right.
we're at the 38.2% Fibonacci level. Now, if we break that, that's where I had my high. That's where I had my high, and since markets fall faster than they rise, we could see a full month of profit taking this week. That's why I have a high confidence in that move to test the highs. The lesser confidence, and it won't happen this week, is retracement of this entire recent rally, which is at the 2850 area. There are a couple of Fibonacci points in between that are worth noting, but there doesn't seem to be much in the way of other confirmation. Like I just mentioned, a double high. I like, you know, there's a gal, her name is Carolyn Borodin.
Heard that name, yeah.
I had a show years ago in the 90s. It was called Risky Business, and it was all about futures market. It was an hour a day on radio, and 5 days a week. And she was one of my favorite people to interview. She talks about something called, not confluence, but synchronicity. That's the name. That was the name of her newsletter. So, and she's got a very high percentage being right. So I've always listened to her. She looks for two or three technical reasons to believe something. Just because something is rolling over and breaking a trend line, that's not good enough for her. She wants to see it, you know, hitting on a resistance area at the same time. She wants to see some Fibonacci numbers. And when she gets three synchronistic indicators, she really feels good about it. And that's when her recommendations come out. So she's really a high probability trader. And that's possibly what we're looking at here, where, you know, there's an uptrend line that was broken today, the simple uptrend line. You talk about lack of new highs. It's another, I'm not going to call it minor, because that seems to be a major thing lately. If we see some action on the downward side, we could have that third testing of the support. So I like what we're seeing here without even talking about momentum, which is
awesome. One other thing is the debt market seemed to be unstable here today a bit, in that I think the factory manufacturing concerns puts into play the concerns that this debt that has just exploded on the market on the corporate level, that the covenant and the collateral on them could come into question, because if we have any type of a settling down of the economy, the debt service could be problematic for some of these companies, particularly in this triple B space, which is the most crowded space, and it's also the last stop before non-investment grade. So if triple B's one level down, it would cause the funds that have to be in investment grade to have to liquidate them. And so that's been a risk for a long time, but risks that have been a long time sometimes obviously happen. You know what I mean?
No, absolutely. And I, you know, most traders that have been around look for a little bit, it was a surprise move, but it's still a surprise move, this, what's going on today in the bonds. And of course, we're seeing a rally in just because of those positive European numbers. We're seeing a big rally in the Eurodollar, in the euro, and we're also seeing a rally in the complementary currencies. Anybody that's been following me knows that I've been watching religiously the Japanese yen. I think we talked about that last time, and I've advised that people keep their eye on it, and if they're going to probe on the long side with it, because we're looking at a double top or double bottom that we've punctured through. We'll talk about it a little bit more maybe later, but the currencies are giving us a kind of a window that you've just described.
Yeah, I have a 10-day graph up on the US dollar, and I see it rolling over pretty sharply. I have a 10-day graph up on HYG and TLT. One is the Treasury, the other one is High Yield Corporate. They look on the 10-year graph that they're rolled over pretty good. And the US dollar, of course, and the S&P is now rolling over pretty good. So there has been a little bit of a get out of dodge here on the 10-day graphs anyway, showing that the bloom came off the rose just a little bit in all those markets I just mentioned.
Yeah, and I think if anybody cares to take a look at a dollar index daily chart, they're going to see that we had what could be considered a shooting star in Friday's trading, where we actually went high, made new weekly highs, and then collapsed and closed on the low of the day, causing that shooting star formation, followed by the follow through today on the downside. All of that action matches a top that occurred about 10 days ago. So we've got a minor double top breakthrough of some of the most moving averages that anybody's going to chart that has any kind of short-term ilk to it.
Now, the short-term moving averages, they've had to have broken. The 50-day broke today, because I have it at 98.22, and the 200-day is at 93. So still above the 200-day, but under the 50. So that's why, the first stages of a potential turn are starting to happen. Whether there's going to be follow-through or not probably has a lot to do with this December 15 tariff, what the Fed does on December 11th, and that is days away.
Mm-hmm. And we're also seeing decreasing momentum here, according to the RSI, and I'm a big fan of HEMA's work, and there's a number of different time frames that are showing weakness in the dollar index. So that's going to that of course will translate for the most part into strength in the and all the other foreign currencies measured against the dollar. But of course there are specific situations that have even more control. But it's going to be helpful to all the foreign currencies on the northern side for sure.
Yeah, and I think Neil, who's not with us today, but did come on with his guess that we are going to roll over to the downside this week, and his probability so high is probably also linked in part to that Japanese candlesticks, because I know he watches those as well.
Well, and also I think if you just look at the size of the candles, just today's the red candles, as we know that there's a saying markets move down faster than they move up, but I think that's a justified expression when you look at the size of the daily movements when you get disappointment in a market. I think largely there's a lot of ego tied to trading, and I think that when you're pushing some positive vibes on yourself, you're seeing the market go up, but when you're wrong, that's when some people tend to bail and cause these exaggerated moves, which could be part of it, especially during thinner markets. So I think this could be a preview to be very careful in the markets. And I'm not saying don't trade them. I'm a guy that likes to trade during this period, but I do think that
from time to time, I'm an option guy. So from time to time, the covered right or the collar strategy, can come in quite handy. A stock like Apple went up to almost 270, and the 200-day moving average was down at around 200. So it was about 30% above its 200-day moving average. And that's a very decent extension over its 200-day average. And if you go 10 or 15 bucks out of the money and get a decent premium, and then take that premium and buy some put insurance or just take the premium in, that could be a decent situation on a short-term basis, because, like I say, some of these things have really gone on big runs. And some people are saying the retail stocks, also have had quite a big run, and they may be indicating a little bit of a temporary slowdown as well.
Which brings up a question for you. I have a bit of a background in options, but not really. I don't get into complicated strategies. I mostly advise people to write covered calls and do some things, maybe some straddles. But in a market like this, when you're looking to take advantage of selling the dollar or selling the bonds or you know, when you have these, or buying some of these currencies like the euro dollar, when you have these strong moves, you've got the increase in premium that's almost automatic. Where does somebody who believes we're maybe one third of the move into the move, what's the best way to approach buying premium, or do you need to do combinations in order?
Obviously when the premiums are relatively high, the way you try to neutralize higher premium is through the spreading device, where you're going to sell a option out of the money to offset the cost of the one you bought underneath. Now, what does that do? It does reduce your cost out of pocket, but it also caps your gain to the difference between the two strike prices less your total cost of the option. Mm-hmm. So the bottom line is that the standard way of approaching a high premium market is to use the spread. Because obviously, you know, if the premium is big enough, it could be discounting most of the move you're planning on seeing anyway. So the market could go your way. You still lose money because the premium decay will kill you. So there's also credit put spreads that people consider underneath the market, where they're only going to have a fixed gain, but they're going to have a fixed risk between the two strike prices again, and with the credit coming off of that. So there's a couple of different ways to do it. Credit put spreads or credit call spreads, you know, are some of them, that people investigate. But, you know, everyone has their own motivation, and you have to find out the strategy that's right for you. But my personal opinion is when the premiums are high, you know, you got to look into the spread market.
Yeah. What about...
Or you have to be in some parabolic move where it doesn't matter what you paid for the option. It's going way faster than volatility can keep up with, you know.
Is there you said, you know, people have their different reasons for doing it. Is there a calendar spread type choice?
Yeah, like I said, that's another way. But then again, you know, you'll have one fighting against the other. So it's, you know, there's always a give for a take, you know what I mean? Right. So, a calendar is another way where you take a long-term position, maybe on the long side, and then basically you sell shorter-term options to try to offset that cost on the shorter-term options.
I mean, if somebody
calendar spreads is another way to go, and under certain circumstances, they could be a better way to go.
Yeah, I've always enjoyed. If somebody wanted to look to find a place to sell the S&P, whether it's being a partial hedge on what they have in their IRAs or whatever, but they're looking to short the market. You had the initial wave down where the market, where the S&P was 30 plus. Now we've had a little bit of a rally. Is there a timing thing that you look at looking at options all day long where you're looking for a premium break so that you can get in? Does it happen within an hour?
Well, I mean, obviously, you know, when I'm seeing 11 on the VIX, and I'm looking at the all-time high on the market, and I think that it could have trouble up in this general region, obviously the puts are looking like a good buy to me. Now, today, obviously, they're good buy because why? We got almost a 20% jump in the VIX, and I'm sure the short-term puts are exploding.
Right.
So, obviously, it's kind of like, a profiling. You know, certain situations fit a profile, and the profile, in this particular case in the last week is, you know, you busted above 3,100 to 3,150. You have got a lot of news coming up that may not break your way. Even if the news does break a good way, how much has already been discounted?
Right.
And when your VIX gets down to 11 and the premiums get very, very low, obviously, you know, either doing a strangle. So if you're wrong, maybe you'll break out the other way. Mm-hmm. And the volatility could be enough to cover both of them. Or just doing outright put hedges against stock. Or like I was talking about, writing the out of the money call, which should be pretty fat because the call, you know, calls should be up pretty good. And then taking that to buy insurance puts underneath and bracketing your equity. Mm-hmm. You know, these are the things that come to my mind very quickly because I've been doing it for decades.
Yeah, you sound like an episode of the Irishman, the straddles and the strangles.
I didn't see that yet, but I understand they did some camera work to make Robert De Niro and Al Pacino look like young men. I'm going to ask them to send that over to me.
You better have time on your hands. I think it's a 3 hour. I think I binged it for 3 hours or something. It's long.
It's a long time. I didn't see it. Yeah. Hey, listen, we're at halftime of the show almost, and we haven't gotten into some of the stuff that you focus on. And again, as far as the options are concerned and my knowledge on them, my first thing I always recommend to everybody is talk to their broker, talk to their brokerage firm, learn as much about the strategies as possible, and then ask them if they think they're suitable for them. And if everything's a go, then go ahead and enjoy yourself. But do investigate the different strategies and definitely talk to your broker and advisor to find out which might or may not be suitable for you. Don't just jump into anything because you hear something on TV. TV or the internet.
Amen.
All right. Now, we are talking up in Norman's Alley. We're going to call it Norman's Alley, and it's going to be in the currency area because I think it looks like something might be occurring as far as the U.S. dollar. And is there going to be follow through or not? Nobody knows for sure, but I'm punching up the currencies right now, and we're going to start taking a look at how that U.S. dollar is shaping up today, which for the foreign currency guys who are bullish, some of them are doing all right here today. So Japanese yen, 91.76, something like that, Norm?
Yeah, correct. I have it at 91.78.5 right now.
78.5, okay, so it's a little bit different.
Yeah, it's up 20. I'm looking at the futures contract. You're looking at the Forex?
Yeah, probably. It's only a couple of ticks different, yeah, nothing to write home about. As far as that market right now, what's your gut feelings?
Yeah, I think if somebody could just take out your daily chart, it's pretty easy to see what's happening. And we haven't had any kind of breakout yet. We keep making more. I mean, this is a definite downtrend. We have lower lows and lower highs the entire way. If you pull back into a weekly and monthly chart, we've just broken a double bottom way back when. So this is where I start to look for these kinds of rallies. Now, the fact that the dollar index has come down nice and hard, and if it continues, you may get that rally here. If you connect lower highs and lower lows. If you take the high from, I believe it's the 26th of August, and you connect that with the high on the fourth trading day of October, you make that line, that trend line down, and you're seeing that we've kept within, except for one break that failed quickly early last week. And then if you're looking at the lower lows, you take the low on, looks like the 13th of August, and you connect that with the low in the middle of September. You'll see it on your chart. And it won't extend the whole way. I don't know what charting system you use, but that bottom line is not going to extend much because we've been riding the top part of that funnel now for the last month. Today, we've broken through again with today's action. We've broken through that channel. Now, it's not something you need to jump on right now, but if you look at some of the recent supports resistances that can become supports, this is a market I like because it's giving me numbers that I can plan on, I can go with. And in the way I trade, I like to have targets and I like to have resistance areas where I can put my stop. And that's what we're entering here. So I think if anybody with their chart, with any kind of chart worthiness, I think you'll find some nice lines to draw to give you some measures on the way up. The last measure being about 92.80 area, where if we break through that, then we're in more rarefied air on the way up. So this is the market that I'm watching. And what I really like about the market is that we've been riding in an area that HEMA likes to call the bull support area, even though we've seen this market come all the way down. So I like the change in momentum. We're starting to see, as I mentioned, I put my position on a couple of weeks ago and have been holding a very small loss up till now. I've gained back half of that loss in today's action and look to be profitable by the end of the week and start to add positions as we break through some of these lines. My resistant lines come at 91.874, then again at 92.448. Those are lines that I've drawn. And again, the one I mentioned, 92.807. Those are critical areas that I see. We could start have some stutter steps, but it's all going to be around the broken out area. In other words, we've broken today this downtrend according to the lines that I've given you. And so I like the setup, and this is the kind of trading that I like to do. If I can add positions on the way up as we confirm, then you can usually really have some nice results.
Yeah, and little bit of a dip could just be running stops, and sometimes after they run the stops it goes the other way for a while, right?
Excellent. Yes, and we talked about spinners before and dojis, where you have a small Friday's action, although it was pretty heavy in a lot of markets, was a very small trading range in the in the Japanese yen, even though it was a positive day, which was unlike the previous six trading days. Kind of gave us hope. Today's extended move breaking that channel may give some, at least a few Japanese traders I know, some cause to look to the northern side. side. So I like the action today.
Yeah, you know, the other way of obviously you're starting out to try to get something near the low, and then once you get confirmation, add to it, which is certainly a legitimate strategy. Another one would be to kind of wait for confirmation momentum, mm-hmm. and there seems to be some levels on the British pound at 130,
yeah.
and on the euro maybe about 111 or so, and on the Japanese yen about 93. Then if they can break those levels, then you might see short covering positioning increase quite a bit. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and if we had Jody Samuels sitting here with her her Elliott Wave, she would tell you to wait for a pullback on this, and the pullbacks can happen at any of those junctures that I talked about on my chart that you can draw on any chart. So you know, if you're looking for a place to get in, sometimes those pullbacks. The problem is, again, it becomes a discipline thing, because in your mind, when it's pulling back, you part of your mind is saying, hey, this thing's pulling back and may not be going. It looks like it's reversing. You know, you start talking yourself into hesitating. So you need to make your plan and draw your lines before. I've had these lines drawn for a month now, most of these, at least several weeks on the latest ones. You've got to have your plan in place. And, you know, you want to do what the market tells you to do, but you want to, if you can, at least the way I trade, you want to try to anticipate what you believe is going on based on the indicators that you have and the experience that you have in knowing what happens to markets, all markets don't go straight up or straight down, that you're looking for things to meet your analysis. And you start off light because you'll mostly be wrong when you're looking into the future like this. But when you're right, you're going to have a nice roadmap to go on with a lot of credibility along the way because you've planned. So really it's a matter of mental juxtapositioning here to do what I've suggested that you may want to do in the Japanese yen.
Yeah. The other thing that people look at is the price of gold and silver. But let's just talk about gold. You know, had the big run up to 1580, which was pretty much the former lows around 2012. And it had resistance there. And it got way overbought. So obviously it had to, you know, digest that pullback, which it's in the process of continuing to do. My gut feeling was 1450, 1400, and 1350 would be three levels to keep an eye on if you're still a believer that the gold has a future to it. You know, and again, with the world's paper currencies and the amount of debt that these guys are issuing as if it's just an unlimited, you know, amount of debt that you can think, you would have to think the paper currency and the debt explosion, you know, has to have some effect at some point that might be positive to the gold. Do you see levels in gold? Do you think gold does have a future? And do you think there's some levels that are interesting?
Well, isn't that the question? I mean, right now we're riding in HEMA's area of a gold support area. And the market is showing, you know, it's showing weakness, but not in any kind of an extravagant way. It looks like the absolute area needs to hold is 1400, looking at that accumulation back in the July-August area. But the accumulation that you're talking about right now, that first level that you're talking about, 1460, if we don't hold that, we should see 1400, according to what I'm looking at here.
Yeah.
You know, then, you know, break of that, and we could go all the way back to, you know, the 1200 type of area.
In that case, the party's over. The bottom line is, if we got a 1700 number in our future, like Tudor Jones has touted, going back to 1200 or 1280 seems awfully generous for the bulls to be able to pick up something that's going to go back to 1700. So, you know, if you broke 1450, 1400, and 1350, which is the three breakout point kind of thing, then I think it would put the whole thing in. I think the deflationary story would have to be going through the roof at that point.
Yeah. I mean, of all those, there's a lot of S, but yeah. I mean, what we're talking about here is that, I mean, you've got to be disappointed with today's move in gold if you're a bull. I mean, you would think that with the market down, you know, 25, 30 points in the S&P, that you've seen gold, you know, up a good $8, $10, $12. But, you know, it can't get out of its own way today, down about 2.5 right now. And we're only challenging a very minor peak about $12, $13 away for resistance. So it's a disappointing action today. But you know, in the end, you know, you got to watch it because disappointing action can fulfill itself very quickly. I guess it's because of the manufacturing area.
The manufacturing is slow. So slow sounds more like recession, and recession sounds more like deflation. And of course, that's not the greatest. But the mining shares, GDX and and some of the other proxies for the mining shares are still holding their 200-day moving average, which I think is encouraging. And holding this 1450 area is encouraging. And the fact that they continue to run deficits of $134 billion in October is encouraging. And the fact that it seems like they would print unlimited money if they had to keep this thing going is encouraging. So there's some things that are encouraging, but I definitely, you know, this, you always lose your enthusiasm when you have a correction. So at 1580, you think the world is fantastic. And at 1450, you're starting to think that your team sank, you know? So the bottom line is, you know, talking about emotions, you know, you have to control those emotions and come up with a game plan that you believe in and obviously take risk with.
Yeah, I've got a question for you because you're, and I probably should ask you this personally, but I might as well ask it with the crowd listening because I'm going to sound like I'm not on top of it. But I know you're some guys have their thing. And, the Chinese, there was talk, I stopped hearing the talk about 4 or 5 years ago, was buying up all our paper and kind of keeping everything afloat. And the risk was that what if they decided to sell all that paper all at once? It could crash our economy. Is there any truth to any of that? And should I be worried about that with all the debt?
Well, obviously, I don't know for sure. You don't know for sure. So we have an opinion. We have a guess, right? And so, my opinion is that they have already been selling off the treasuries from what I've read. And I don't know that the amount of treasuries they have are that tremendous. And I also think the Fed would print and buy it back themselves because that's the deal now. Print money and buy your own securities back. That's what they do all around the world, right? So bottom line is I don't think that's as much of an issue, but I do think the issue is the Chinese have been supposedly buying quite a bit of gold, and central banks have been buying a lot of gold. And I think that they are becoming more and more concerned because of how aggressive we have been about America first to have the U.S. dollar as the reserve currency, because that makes them very much hostage to the U.S. And if they could find another settlement means that they could live with, I think they would go with it. And my case in point there is that the European governor made a big speech in Jackson Hole about digital currency, and the Chinese are embracing blockchain technology. And so I think, you know, our days of holding the world hostage to the U.S. dollar as a settlement is not getting further away from change. It's getting closer to possible change.
Well, I'm sorry.
That's what I think.
Yeah, listen, for those that don't understand or the newer traders that may not understand what he's talking about holding hostage, in order for any country to buy oil, you've got to first convert your currency into U.S. dollars because U.S. dollars is what's accepted in the oil market. So that's a demand on oil that I've seen up as much as, you know, 25 and 30% on the total demand of the U.S. dollar and how true that is. But suffice it to say, it's a big chunk. And if all of a sudden oil could be sold in any currency and it didn't need the U.S. to buy the U.S. dollar in order to convert that to petrodollars, then that could really hurt the U.S. dollar. So it's being propped up to some degree, the U.S. dollar, by its positioning as far as the oil market is concerned. So I think that's what you were getting at.
Yeah, that, and you're giving another example. You know, the Saudis used to basically control our existence on oil, and now shale and other domestic producing has changed that. And it's not coincidental. Now they're willing to sell the company. So, you know, I don't think they're selling Aramco because they're nice guys. They're selling Aramco because they can see that the way these trends are going, what they own, what they do, might not be as popular in 5 or 10 or 20 years. And they'd rather get $2 trillion now than maybe, a half a trillion if the thing goes electric or something. You know what I mean?
Right.
In other words, you know, when they're coming to market, you know, and some of these new offerings you've seen, they come out at $80 and they're at $20 before you know it. So, you know, people coming public is not always evidence that it's a great time for the company. It might be sometimes a way for executives to unload their equity to the unsuspecting public who's getting caught up in a bunch of greed.
Right.
But, again, so you think the gold, is still dodgy here, but it's not, you're not a table slamming bear or bull at this point, right?
No, I think the jury is way out on it. I mean, if you look at the, February gold chart, daily chart, you're going to see you're going to see a nice flattish downward trend, not any kind of, not much of an angle. And if this is going to be a gigantic flag, and it's very formidable, the length of time. You know, that's really, we used to take a protractor when we were using the charts on the paper, and you started you started where the trend began, and you, and then when it breaks out, you take your protractor and you see, and you, you set your targets. And the longer this protracted move goes on, I like that play on words, the bigger this move will be. So there's going, the bulls are going to look at that, at this accumulation. The distance from the top to where we are right now is $100.
Yeah.
So it's not like we've crashed over the last 3, 4, or 5 months, you know?
No, like I say, the 200-day moving average on gold is still intact, and the 200-day moving average on some of the gold stock proxies are still intact. So to throw it out the window with the bathwater, I just think is premature. But like you're saying, if deterioration turns into rotting, then you've got a different situation. Right now, I would describe it as deterioration and correction rather than rotting and the party's over.
Right.
I think the evidence that I'm looking at leans me that way. Now, obviously, it could change any time. Let's look at a couple of other markets before we sign off. And one is in the crude oil, which, you know, obviously has been in this 60-50 range. Today it's up. But do you have a gut feeling that it might be on its way anywhere special here at the 55, 56 area? I mean, are we going to take out 60 and go higher? Or are we stuck here for the foreseeable future?
You know, I wish I could help you in there. I mean, we're selling the market when it approaches the 60 area and buying it around the 50 area has made a lot of people a lot of money lately in the last few months. And last few months, all the way back to June. And, you know, we seem to be very comfortable here in this area.
Yeah, so, it really does. Yeah.
You know, the length of the, I think we're going lower in the short term because we're above the midpoint, but we've done it in an aggressive fashion. Again, a spinner followed by a decisive spinner on a Thursday, followed by a decisive down move today, really shows indecision and then everybody deciding the same thing. And that's downward. That was critical on Friday. Today we're seeing a response to that. We were much higher earlier today than we are, and if we take out today's low, I think we're going to shoot for that 54 first and then the 52 area.
So, I think there's an OPEC meeting this week or next as well, and that could be a factor on how things come out, because they're saying that Saudi has excess capacity and they're one of the only ones that really have it. So it'll be interesting to see if the OPEC meeting shakes things up, because sometimes that can happen.
I will tell intraday traders, though, on the crude oil that, you know, on one hand, you have to be careful. But on the other hand, if you've been watching crude oil during the day, it's been pretty consistent when it takes a direction. You can see some of these bars opening at the high and closing at the low without. And if you look at the 240 and 60, there wasn't much response in between that would trap you. So it's been a very good market to trade for intraday traders, too. I just wanted to make a note of that.
Yeah, I mean, if you can find a consistent market on any game of chance or any risk investment, that's a very big bonus, because, you know, if something is consistently bad or consistently good, or if a chart formation consistently kind of plays out, you can't really ask for more than that, because that's a very big advantage if you can find that environment. Mm-hmm. One last thing, quickly, grain. We got corn, soybeans, and wheat, to name three. And of course, Jake has been kind of fond of the bean oil. What are you thinking here? I mean, it seems like, you know, it's kind of dependent on a China deal and some buying, because the farmers don't seem to be taking this money that the government gives them and doing anything but paying debt down and keeping money in reserve for a rainy day. They're not buying plant and equipment, because John Deere is telling you that. So the bottom line is we've come right back down into the 868 area on soybeans. What's your feeling on these grains?
Yeah, we're at a critical point here. I mean, we've had eight trading days in a row where the market closed below the open. And if you go back further, you're still seeing a majority of red bars from the recent top, which is not odd for the beans. They can be very, very trendy. But we're now hitting an area just about 5 cents from here that we need to hold, that 864 area.
Okay.
In the January beans. If we can hold that, I think we could see a rally. We are way oversold already on the daily chart.
On a short-term basis, yeah.
On a short-term basis. So you got to watch for a pop making you believe that you've got a change of direction. Again, because we tend to get a series of red or a series of green bars. Sometimes with the beans, it's best to wait or at least go very lightly early in a reversal stage. But that said, it usually happens not in an abrupt turnaround, but in a tail type of a way, where you see a lot of shooting stars near a top or a lot of hammers at the bottom for you fans. So it doesn't always happen, but I think don't be caught in believing you have a move until you see confirmation, either through another. Again, you want to see two or three indicators here. I mean, we're already oversold. You want to look for the pop-up, but we need to break at least the 8 bar exponential moving average, and then maybe even the 20 to be even safer to see a move up. But I think it's all treacherous with the, I subscribe to a woman. I gave you her name on the last show, and I'm not in a position to look it up right now. A woman who's a reporter for the main English newspaper in China. And, they're not so positive about much coming as far as the trade talks are concerned. So
they want the tariffs be rolled back, and if he does that, that's a white flag, and that's probably not going to happen, and those guys look pretty stubborn over there, so it'd be kind of interesting to see what happens. But right now we're at the top of the hour, Norm, and I want you to again be able to reintroduce yourself to newcomers, and also make sure let people know how they can get a hold of you and try to increase their ability to trade well by getting their head together.
Yeah, we're about to start a new program, and I won't spend any more than a minute or two telling you, because those on this, we have a light crowd because this is a holiday crowd, really. I'm sure we have a lot. I don't see how many people are on this call, but I know it's a light crowd, so I want to start with a light crowd. We've been doing this in a way now for the last year privately with traders that have been with us for a while, but we're starting something called laser coaching, which are 15, we're going to offer traders unlimited number of coaching sessions. You choose. If you want to get coached, put it on the calendar and we'll be there. 15-minute coaching sessions, unlimited for a year. And that is an extraordinary offer, but I think it's going to be worth it, not only for you, but for us. I think we're going to, because we want to change people's behavior. And,
right.
We offer something that it's mostly a do-it-yourself at the Discipline Trader, which is we give you all the mental trainings and all the things. But I got to tell you, the majority of people have it, but it's like a gym membership. If you have a gym membership and you're going to the gym every day or a few times a week and you're taking advantage of that membership, you may not need or you may not want personalized coaching. But if you want a one-on-one with Tisha and I, it's actually two-on-one, our mental trainer, where we can make specific mental training specifically for you. And she uses all the modern techniques. If you're interested in this, just email me. You can email me at admin, it's short for administration, admin@thedisciplinedtrader.com. Okay, admin@thedisciplinedtrader.com. Say, tell me more about the laser coaching. Unlimited number of sessions. The hook is that you can have as many sessions as you want, but if we ask you to take a mental training a few times before to solve a particular problem, then we want you to do that before you ask for another training. But if you're into it and you follow direction, this is a program you will not find. I mean, let alone people who care about the mental and emotional issues. Everybody's pointing at the great markets and the holy grail. It's all, you got it. You can do this. You just have to keep your head together. And with unlimited number of coachings for a year, I think you'd be interested. We're doing it at a very crazy price too. So if you're interested and you want to learn more about it before we actually expose it to the public, admin@thedisciplinedtrader.com, and I'll respond to it and give you the details. No hard selling on this. I'm not hard selling this, because it takes a lot of our time, and we can't do it for more than say 20, 30 people in a year. But it's not even $1,000. So I'll give you the price right there. That's how crazy it is for unlimited coaching for a year. Anyway, that's what we're doing. We're excited about it for the new year. And so I appreciate being on, Jim. And I actually heard more from you than you usually tell. And I didn't mean to pump you on the options, but you're one of the smartest option guys I know. So I'm sorry about that.
That's something that I've done for a very long time. Again, check out what Norm's talking about. Do get in contact with him and see exactly how the the coaching could help you and overcome some of these things that might be hurting you as far as your behavior and the mental approach to the thing, which anybody who's traded for any length of time knows is a big, big factor. For those who'd like to get my weekly update on what I'm seeing in all the markets or have any questions for me at all, just shoot me an email at optionprofessor@gmail.com. Be more than happy to communicate with you. Right now, I'm going to turn it over to David, and thank you, everybody, for coming today. Norm, of course, and David, back to you.
All right. Thanks, guys. Great discussion. So just a quick reminder for everyone, be sure to subscribe to Timing Research on YouTube and your favorite podcast directory. And you can also go to timingresearch.com to get access to the report or the archive of this show as soon as it's available. You can also be sure to check out last Monday, Anka Metcalf and I hosted a series of lectures about the on the topic of Black Friday and Cyber Monday trading strategies. So since it's Cyber Monday, be sure to check out some of those. And of course, a lot of that info is still relevant even beyond today. But if you just scroll down, if you go to timingresearch.com and scroll down on the right side of your screen, you'll see a recent posts box there, and you can just click on Synergy Traders number 7. Be sure to join us tomorrow for Analyze Your Trade number 104. That'll be at 4 p.m. Eastern Time. Harry Boxer will be back, and Jim will be here to moderate. And you can go to timingresearch.com/live to get access to that event. So I just want to thank my guests again for today. Neil Batho was supposed to be here, but wasn't able to make it, so we'll have him back soon. Also, Norman Hallett of thedisciplinedtrader.com and Jim Kenny of optionprofessor.com. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, David.
Thank you, David.